Roxana Robinson is the award-winning author of 7 novels, 3 short story collections, and a biography of Georgia O'Keeffe. Her latest is the novel Leaving. What risks would you be willing to take to fall in love again? The new novel navigates the chasm between responsibility and desire when 2 long-lost lovers reconnect. Sarah and Warren's college love story ended in a single moment. Decades later, when a chance meeting brings them together, a passion ignites, threatening the foundations of their lives. We welcome Roxana Robinson to tell us more on the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's a great pleasure for me to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
What does the still, with the amount of work that you have produced, of the excitement level that comes when a new novel is let go into the world?
Well, every time I write a book, it's because of a new idea or problem that has presented itself to me. So I never feel as though, okay, this is another one, more of the same. It's always, I have this wonderful thing that I want to share with everyone, and it's exciting to know what the response will be.
When you talk about something that comes to you, in this case, did Sarah and Warren come to you as sort of somewhat fully formed?
Well, I knew from the beginning what their circumstances would be, that they would have had a relationship early in their lives, in their 20s, and I knew that they would meet up again. I didn't know exactly how things would go, but I was really excited by this idea, which hasn't really been explored very much, the idea of what happens in your life when you're their age, 60, when you form a new relationship, because your life is so different at that moment from the way it was at 20. At 20, you have no encumbrance, you have no responsibilities. If you've graduated from college, you can go wherever you want. No one will complain or try to encourage you to do something different. You really are encouraged to find your new path. But at 60, you will have made a kind of nest for yourself in the world. You will have a place where you've been living maybe for 30 years. You may have adult children who are still part of your life. You may have colleagues and a career. So all those things, in a way, hold you in the place that you've made. So your new relationship will be connected to all of those ideas. You're not free at that point.
You're not free at that point. I'm not 60, but I'm getting there. And I'm curious at the fact of, you say, because of all that you've gone through in your life, well, change doesn't come easy just in general, right?
Well, change is always a challenge. It means there are new possibilities, but it means there are things you have to give up. So you're always, I think, torn in between those two ideas of gathering or garnering something new and having to leave something that you're used to.
Let's talk about the two main characters. Tell us first about Sarah and where she comes in the story.
The story is told mostly through Sarah's point of view, and when it opens, she's 60. She's been single for maybe 15 years. She and her husband divorced at her request, and then later her husband died of cancer. So she's completely alone as a woman in the world. She has 2 adult children. She lives in northern Westchester. She's very happy. She works at a local museum. She has a wonderful dog that she loves. She's living in the house where she's lived and raised her children for years. So she's very comfortable in the life that she leads. And one interviewer, who is a woman, said, you've made an aspirational character. This is a single woman who is happy with her lot, which is interesting to me. That's not what I was thinking. But yeah, Sarah is very comfortable in her life.
It's interesting that you wouldn't think that yet that would be the vibe that someone got from that. And I guess what we bring to it, right?
Yeah, she said it's so much more common to read about a woman who is single at that stage in her life and is desperately seeking a partner. She wants a spouse. She wants a man in her life. She wants a husband. And you've written about somebody who is really complete in her life, and that's something for us to think about and aspire to.
Give us a little of the backstory of Warren.
Warren and Sarah grew up together on the main line outside Philadelphia, and so they knew each other as teenagers and as college students, and they split up because of a misunderstanding, and they don't see each other for 30 years. He has become an architect. He lives in Boston. He has a wife, the same wife that he's had all along, and he has an adult daughter. And he is a man of generosity and great integrity. He is good to his employees. He's good to his family. And he feels an obligation to society, a responsibility that he takes very seriously.
One of the things that struck me is that these are characters who obviously are challenged, as you mention, but just seem very nice. They just seem they're very nice people. We don't, at least I don't. You don't read enough about they're just very nice people trying to muddle through.
Yeah, they're decent. They're both decent people who take their obligations seriously, take their obligations as parents seriously, as workers, as members of the world. They're trying to do their best.
The beautiful opening scene takes place at the opera, and the book is infused with so much beauty and so much art, and I'm interested, that seems like that would come natural to you.
Yeah, art has played a big part in my life. I started out working in the art world, in the field of American paintings, and that has been not just American paintings, but the presence of art in the world is a huge part of my life. What artists have created, what they've given to us. And it was my husband who introduced me to the opera. He's a real scholar. I am not, but I love the opera and have been to many performances all over the world. And this particular performance of Tosca was one that I attended and was very, very moving. And I don't know why I said it as the opening of this book, but it was just a part of my consciousness. And that's, you know, what writers often do is they want to engage with the world and bring into their work the moments that have been meaningful to them. So I wasn't really thinking of anything when I said it in this place, but that's where I wanted to start, with the idea of kind of a temple of art. The Metropolitan Opera House is a temple to the beauty and the power of art. So that's where it begins.
I'm curious of this idea of thinking your way through as to where the novel is going to go is fascinating to me.
Yeah, I did know how the book was going to end because I was fascinated by this idea of honor and what someone's obligation would be. But I didn't know how it was going to get there. So every scene that I write is something that came out of the scene before it. So a character says one thing, and then in the next scene, it is informed by what that character has done in the last scene. So everything is organic and unfolds. But with this presence of honor that underlies it.
You said you knew the ending. You don't always, though, do you?
I never know the ending of a novel, so this was very different. Well, in the preceding one, which was based on my great-grandparents, I did know the ending, but in all my other novels, no. I start out with a group of characters and something that I find troubling and interesting, and the characters basically write the novel. I don't know where they're going, mostly.
I believe in a conversation we had in the past, you said that you will write very thoroughly about those characters before you start. You know a lot about the characters as you enter into it.
You have a good memory. I do. I write a little biography of the main characters, so partly so that I won't make a mistake in chapter 18 and say that somebody came from Indiana when they came from Maine, but also so that character becomes very real to me And her personality is one that I know and understand. So she will be consistent psychologically throughout the book. I know who she is. I know who her parents are. I know what kind of house she grew up in. I know what the family attitudes are towards the government, towards education, whether they had a big yard or a small one. All those things inform us as characters and regarding the way we look at the world. So I need to know that before I start writing dialogue.
Do you know that in the point of it's down on paper, or do you know that in your brain that you can, as you're going, say, oh, the yard was small, the mailbox was on the left?
The fact that the yard is small alludes to their socioeconomic status. So if they had a small yard, they had a small house, and they lived on a street full of houses like that. So that informs me as to their place in the world and how they would have seen it. So they may have been aspirational, they may have been resentful, they may have been struggling, but all that is part of their character. In this book, Warren grows up in a very affluent community, but his family is not affluent. And that affects him as a person, as a personality. So all of that, it's not that I need to know that the mailbox was on the left. I need to know what kind of neighborhood it was.
The idea of living in an affluent area and not being affluent yourself, did that, just that idea, interest you of something to explore?
Yeah, I think most reflective people feel like outsiders. I think most writers feel like outsiders. And I think many more people than we realize feel like outsiders. If you don't know the right door to get into a building, if you're afraid you're wearing the wrong clothes, if you don't know the way to talk to somebody, you feel as though you're an outsider. But lots of people feel like outsiders for lots of different reasons. And to be in an affluent community where people assume that you have more money than you have, or whether it's obvious that you have less money than they do, that sets up a certain tension, which is very interesting to me.
The idea of the tension, the idea of the outsider status, and you as a writer feeling that way, do you get over that? Is it a reset after each novel, or is it just never goes away?
Well, I live in the world, so I'm constantly in new situations that I'm not familiar with, and so I don't know which door to go into. I don't know if I'm going to get there late. I don't know if everybody else has already shared a joke. So I'm constantly new in the world, which is partly anxiety-producing and partly wonderful because it delivers new things to me.
Because if you didn't have the curiosity to know, I mean, if you always knew what door to go into, what fun's that, right?
Yeah, it's constantly an adventure. You're always trying to find out something that you didn't know before.
Tell me about the title of Leaving, because it's very poignant and I'll let you explain it.
It's interesting that you want to know about it. It was the subject of a lot of conversation. And it was sort of a joint decision. I think it came from my publicist, Paul Bogards. I think he was the one that came up with it. And we all agreed that it refers on many levels to what happens in the book. So I give him credit.
And it, because it does, I mean, just that word has a wistful tone to it, doesn't it? Which is, I think, interesting, but also enchanting in its own way.
Oh, that's an interesting word to use. Yes, I think so. I think if we can perceive ourselves as leaving something, it means we're looking at it from a distance, and that does set up a kind of nostalgia and grieving and wistfulness, as you say. Yeah, it takes on a kind of magic.
You were saying that of you're always in this constant state of working and thinking of the next thing that's going to happen with the characters. But when the novel comes out, do you give yourself, because it seemed at the beginning you were indicating that you don't look for it, it just comes.
I'm already in the middle of the next one, so, and I...
That's a no.
Well, it takes a while for a book to come out. There's always a gap between the time you finish it and it actually appears in the world. And I can't remember when I started this, but it was it's something that struck me. It's just a tiny little exchange between two people, but it seemed like evidence of a huge, quiet, seismic shift. So I wanted to just explore that shift. It may not be enough for a novel, but I'm struggling with it. I'm on the way.
When you say it may not be enough for a novel, yes, a struggle, but also that seems exciting.
As a writer, you never know where you're going. You never know what's going to happen. This has not happened to me, but I know writers who said, I've written 100 pages and I'm throwing the whole thing out. It's not a novel. Once I get 100 pages in, I'm so determined. I'm burrowing in there like a mole. I have those big paddle feet, and I'm just going to go in there until I find the other end of it. But it is constantly a journey of discovery. I don't know what's going to happen. The characters, it's not that I am thinking of the next scene. The characters make the next scene. The characters say things during the scene that I never expected them to say. And then that changes the path of the novel. Oh, okay, we're going there. I didn't discover in Cost until halfway through I thought Cost was going to be a little quiet novel about a family spending 2 weeks together in Maine. And because I was inside one of the characters' mind and he's remembering a visit to his brother, I realized his brother is a heroin addict and it's going to be about heroin addiction. So it took me 5 years to learn about heroin addiction. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen in the book as I write it. The characters are what determine the narrative.
The writing is so beautiful. And I can leave it at that, but I am curious as to your process of revising and working with the language and polishing it to a sense where no one else at that moment, but that you are happy with it.
I write, of course I revise, but I don't, first of all, I don't rearrange the text. I don't say, oh, chapter 3 should be chapter 8, because what's happened in chapter 3 informs chapter 8. I can't switch those things around. I do, every time I sit down to write, I open the file, which is the chapter I'm working on now, and I start in on the first paragraph, and I read every sentence again to see if it's right. And every sentence has to be, in my mind, beautiful. It has to be as expressive as I can make it, but it also has to be beautiful in terms of the placement and the sound of the words. So I don't read it out loud, but I read it out loud in my mind so that every sentence has the correct rhythm and the correct information, and I want it to be emotionally compelling as well as linguistically beautiful. That's my intention.
It is such a beautifully written novel with such wit and wisdom and such rich and fascinating characters. The new novel is Leaving. It is by Roxana Robinson, and it is published by Norton. What a great pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us.
Thank you so much, Joe. What a lovely interview. Thank you for having me.
Again, Roxana Robinson's latest is the novel Leaving. It is published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.